babysit recently. We had a nice time. We played Barbies. I'd never played Barbies before. She really blew my mind when she pulled out Barbie's bright pink plane. I was like, whoa, is Barbie the pilot or a flight attendant? And she said both. Stressful. Barbie's teaching these young girls a valuable lesson. When you become a woman, you can be anything, but you will probably have to do everything. Now, get to that second job.
Yes, you made it. You are probably driving in your car. You could be listening to so many better things. Like, you could be listening to an amazing serial killer podcast. Guess what? It's the husband. You didn't even need to listen to it. It was the husband, and they hid the body in the truck. You could be learning a foreign language. You could be learning so many things. But instead, you decided to listen to me again for some fucking reason. I have no idea, and I thank you for that. I appreciate it. But I'm not going to pitch anything in the beginning of the show. That's a big fat lie. I'm going to. June 12th, you've heard about me talk about it on the show already. I have the amazing Katie Hughes. She's coming from Atlanta to do a show at the Sparrow. And then on that show, I have the very funny Jason Gross and Tim Heckle, which are hilarious guys. And it's going to be an amazing show. And so I convinced and coerced Katie to be on the show. So welcome, Katie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. My air conditioner just got serviced. And it's kind of like an oil change where you have that psychological feeling that like your car's running better.
Yeah.
So it feels like
last summer I thought we had an air conditioner and we didn't. So like the whole summer I'm like, it's not working. And then it turns out we just didn't have one.
You didn't have one?
Yeah. I there was one behind the building, but it was our neighbor. So I'd see it running and I'm like, I guess it's just not very cool in my house. And it just turns out we didn't have one.
But you like live in it. I mean, it had to be like 90 degrees in your house.
It was so hot every day. It was insanely hot. I was miserable. But now we have air conditioning. And it's great.
Oh, good. That's nice. Because when I grew up, I didn't have air conditioning out in Colorado. You didn't need it really, except for about a week. And that week you just were miserable and people just stayed out of their
house. Like the same as North Carolina, whereas like in the mountains, you have like the trees, you have shade. But in Atlanta, it's like, it's misery, truly.
Yeah. Speaking of Asheville, is that where you're from or is that kind of where you grew up? How does that work out?
Flat Rock, North Carolina is the actual name of the town. But yeah, like Asheville's just an easy way to tell people what it's near, I guess, if that makes sense. So yeah, and I did like stand up in Asheville for a little bit, but Western North Carolina in the hills.
In the hills. So
in the mountains.
We'll start in the hills of North Carolina, but... I always find it interesting, like how I start kind of following comics. Like some of them you just kind of randomly see and you're like, oh, I'll follow this person. I like their sense of humor or, you know, whatever. Or you do a show with somebody and, you know, you get attached to them and you like them or whatever on Instagram or Facebook. And I know your brother, Cody Hughes.
Yes.
He has quite the following in Charleston. Like we love Cody and any chance we get, we bring him down here. And we are obsessed with him. And my second show I ever ran, I was running shows way before I should have been. And he was on my second show and the audience was they were all like 65-year-old, you know, straight out of Crackle Barrel, came over to the show type of crowd. And Cody, they had no idea how to react with him for like the first 15 minutes of his set. And then he just destroyed the room. He killed it. And I just have such a deep appreciation for the guy. But then I figured out, like, okay, Katie Hughes, Cody Hughes, brother, sister. This is a cheesy question, but, like, were you guys always fucking around, like, as far as, like, your humor and, you know, kind of goofballs? Or did you guys come from different schools of humor? Like, how did that kind of play out in your childhood? And was there other people in the family that kind of had that knack as well?
I would say my parents are pretty like funny as far as parents go. Like they're sarcastic. But we would find a lot of similar things funny, like have little inside jokes, like, you know, you see something on like The Simpsons and you're like, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. So we're going to like repeat it 100 times. But we also started comedy around the same time. I feel like I maybe goaded him into it. Cause like, you know, when you start comedy, you've got all the hubris in the world and you're like, not everyone can do this. And he was like, yeah, I think everyone could do this. And then he went and did it and he's so funny. So, I think our onstage styles are very different, but I think we probably find a lot of the same comedians and movies and things like that, pretty similar taste in like other people's comedy.
Yeah. Do you find yourselves ever jealous with one another as far as comedy or like what you're doing or, you know, who's opening for somebody or who's got a show at this place? Or do you ever find yourselves doing that?
I don't think so. Like, I think it's more of like, oh, that's exciting. Like he got to open for Lewis Black when he was in college. And like later we got to go see him for free because he was like performing near where we lived. So it really just has benefited me, honestly.
Yeah. That was a really political answer. I'm kidding.
I mean, there's like, it's really hard to be jealous of other feature acts in the Southeast. You're like, I think we're all doing the same thing.
Yeah. That we're all just trying our fucking best.
Yeah.
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 Do you guys ever, give each other punch ups or like look at each other's stuff?
I mean, we don't live near each other currently, so it's that's like, true. It's hard to say that that's the case, but like, I think that if I asked him, does this work or whatever, like he would give me an honest opinion and good advice. But like, I genuinely think what he does is so unique is like, I would more be gushing over like, oh, I really liked this thing. And this part that you said was so funny. So I'm more somebody who's like, do you think this is good? Like, I definitely need more reassurance than he probably does.
Yeah. Now when you were in Nashville, you started comedy there. What was it that, you know, I think people,
I didn't start there. I started there. In Raleigh, okay. North Carolina. And yeah. Then I moved to Florida for a while. And then when I moved back to North Carolina, I was in Asheville for a little bit. So it was probably about like 4 or 5 years into.
Okay. So you were
a
hunter gatherer traveling around the South and then finally ended up in Atlanta.
A nomad. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. And then, so what brought you to Atlanta finally? And what, I guess you've been there for a while now.
I've been here for 5 years. Before that, I lived in Chicago for like 4.5 years. And every time I would visit Atlanta, everybody was like super friendly and the scene seemed fun. So it was kind of just like I'm kind of over Chicago thing. And then we just moved down here.
Yeah. Now with Atlanta, you know, I've talked to a few Atlanta comedians on the show. As far as the scene, you know, I always find it interesting looking at other scenes from afar. You know, from the outside in and just kind of seeing what what they're all about. What do you think are some of the positive things currently with the Atlanta comedy scene and maybe some not so great things about the Atlanta comedy scene?
I think some of the positive things are that it's starting up again.
Sure. Yeah.
It's kind of hard to have positive things happening during a quarantine. So like, it's nice that comedy is coming back. I think that we've got a really good club that like wants to nurture comics, like the Laughing Skull, like has mostly showcase shows, which I think is a really good way to like grow as a comic. They do like a residency program where somebody can be like the resident for an entire month, which was something I did in like 2018. And it kind of like made me realize I could do comedy full time. Star Bar is really a great show that's coming back in June. And I would say that's something that motivated me to be like, oh, I want to be a regular at Star Bar. How do I get good enough to do that?
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of like rings to reach for that will make you try harder to be better.
Now, besides comedy, I mean, you do like writing and, you know, some other stuff besides just comedy, right?
Mm-hmm. Like,
creatively.
I've written a couple like pilot like sitcom pilots just on my own. I've collaborated with some people like working on their stuff. Nothing's like been sold, but it's just something that I enjoy doing and hope to make bags full of money at later. But yeah, I've done like sketch and improv when I lived in Chicago, but I would say like my primary focus has been stand up, and then, you know, just being inside for a full year kind of makes you do other things as well.
And speaking of other things, I'm jumping around everywhere, but it's a perfect spot for it. So you have your own podcast on the Helium Podcast Network. Tell us about your podcast.
It's identical to this one, except I would be asking the questions to you.
Fair enough. That's a good explanation. That's pretty good. That works. How did you get hooked up?
But yeah, sometimes I'll do like a no guest, and I'll do like a pre-written thing where it's like, here's some stuff I was thinking about. But most of it's just like me asking other people about like their most embarrassing moments in comedy or terrible advice they've gotten, things like that.
Yeah, it's funny that like the podcast train, especially during COVID, like, it's going to be interesting to see how many people, like I'm talking like the real famous people, like, you know, now like Chappelle has his own podcast, which has been great. I've listened. I think there's only like two episodes out so far, but everyone's got a podcast, and I wonder if that's going to sustain, and that, or if they're going to like drop this stuff, or if this is, you know, that train's going to keep going. It's kind of, I don't know.
You mean like if like really successful comedians will keep going?
Yeah, like keep doing the podcast, because it's like I can't think of like my favorite like 15 comedians. I don't know if any of them don't have a podcast at this point, which is kind of sad. But then again,
I mean, I guess if they're making money doing it, then yeah. But it seems like a stopgap for not being able to do real stand up. So it's like hard to say how like invested like they'll be doing it. Like, are they going to be doing like, you know, multiple shows a week to do that? Because if you already have a fan base, like that seems like the whole reason to have podcasts is to like reach more people that you wouldn't have done stand up in front of in the first place.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Not that they couldn't sustain it, but it's like almost like, why would they sustain it?
Sure. Like, what would keep them from, you know, to keep doing it unless they're making those big bags of cash that you speak of?
Yeah.
Which anytime I think of a bag of cash, I think of like those burlap sacks, like in the cartoons.
Yeah. You got the dollar sign on it.
I want one of those.
Don't we all?
One of my goals, I think, so the new show that I'm, the new venue that I'm kind of helping run comedy, I think I want to get it like a cape and a cowl. And during the show, because, you know, I'm having other hosts run the show and whatnot. So I'm trying not to do stage time too much because that's weird, like being on stage every weekend. But my goal is during the show, I kind of want to interrupt it and be in a I want like a superhero costume, but like a, more of a villain. And I want there to be a fake, huge burlap bag of cash. And I just take the cash and I leave. Because, you know, that's what gatekeepers do, you know? So that's my goal. That's my goal. I'm going to do it. I'm doing it.
You're like, I'm going to disrupt the show that I spent time putting together and promoting.
I'm going to totally destroy it. Yeah.
It's your show.
Yeah. You know, that's it's very artistic in that case. So back to Atlanta, what's some things that you wish, you know, could change or be fixed? I mean, besides, of course, the COVID stuff and, you know, everyone going back, but. What do you think are some things that Atlanta needs for comedy to kind of thrive or do better?
I mean, I guess one thing that like we've been talking about is just like you're never gonna like comedy's such a solo sport that it's not really ever gonna like be like, oh, I wish everyone would do this and then it'll all be perfect. But I think just people like helping out like younger comics or comics that they like see potential in and just being like, hey, here's how to avoid some of the pitfalls, like almost like being more mentor like because I feel like comedy is one of the few industries where there's not like a mentor type program. Like if you worked anywhere else, you'd have some boss being like, oh, let me show you how to do this better. And that being said, I'm not necessarily going to do that, but I do think that if people were kinder to others, that would be nice.
So what Katie's saying is we can sign up. You can go to her website and she will be your mentor.
Yeah. You can send me some money and we'll see what we can do.
Bags of cash, preferably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean to say, like, the scene, like, I don't know, like, because, you know, you can run the best show. You, like, I just think, like, complaining about anything is like, well, then go do the thing that you're complaining about.
Yeah.
And do it better. So, like, for me personally, I'm like, well, I just want to be better at comedy. So that just means, like, going out more, getting booked more. I'm not looking to be, like, the world's best show producer or, like, open mic host. So, like, I've done those things, and it's like, it's fine. You know, you're participating in the community, but if you want everything to be the way you like it, then you have to do it yourself, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you do, it's kind of weird that you always have those, you have, I don't know, 10%, 20% of the kind of the comedy circle. They want it to be like a, I don't know, some type of club, you know, like, oh, we need to be, you know, we need to all hang out more and joke right together and do this and that. And like you said, it's no matter what, at the end of the day, comedy is it's a individual sport. It's like golf. You're out there swinging the club yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. Let me see what, so, you know, one of the cool things I just found out about you is that you either hosted or you opened for Chappelle and Donnell Rawling. How did that come about? How did that happen? I want to hear all about that.
Well, Donnell Rawlings I hosted for just because it was like my weekend to host at the Skull. Like, oh, yeah. That was my residency. So it was like, whoever's there is who you're hosting for.
Yeah.
And then the Chappelle thing was more like, he was in town hanging out with people. And then they got like a text that was like, oh, he's going to come hang out, or he's going to come do a set at the end of the show. So everybody's all a Twitter, you know, and I was already just hosting the showcase. And then he finally showed up. So we kept having to put like more and more people on because they kept going, oh, he's almost there. He's almost there. And then when he got there, he did like 3 hours of, I wouldn't say it was comedy. It was a lot of like just extemporaneous talking.
Yeah.
And because I was hosting, I couldn't leave. So there's just pictures of me like leaning against the wall, like, dear God, when am I going to go home? And then, at the end he left his cell phone on stage. So I like went to go give it to his, you know, bodyguard or whatever. And he was like, God bless you. Not everyone would do that. I'm like, I don't need two phones. Like, I barely want to look at mine. So what are we going to do with that?
It's all, you know, guys like him, and I know like Chris Rock is known for that, where they could just go into a club and talk for 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And yeah, I can't imagine hosting that. That had to be interesting.
Yeah, it was like exciting at first, and then you're like, oh no, I'm in hell. This is literal purgatory now. Like, no one knows when it's going to be done. Like, there were people leaving. Like, it's like, oh, it's exciting to see Dave Chappelle for their first hour and a half because you didn't know he was there. Yeah. But then you're like, oh, the babysitters left my child in the bathtub. I have to go get them now. Like there were people just like, I gotta tap out.
I gotta go. Yeah. Yeah. It's that guy that won't leave at the, you know, at the dinner party. It just keeps hanging out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And T.I. was there, which was exciting for people at the time.
Yeah.
Right now, I think he's embroiled in some human trafficking scandal, so it's not that exciting to go, oh, he was there.
Yeah. But shout out to T.I. Or not shout out to T.I.
I'm not going to shout out to T.I. He did yell at Dave Chappelle because Dave Chappelle asked if anyone had questions, and T.I. said, why'd you go to Africa? And it was like, oh, but he's already said that. Like, they were both like very drunk. So it's like, I don't know. I didn't enjoy it very much. Yeah. You know, just wasn't fun. It felt like being at work and it was like, there's a party that won't leave and that's in your section.
Yeah. No, oh, man. And I bet too, like you said, like that first lead up, like, hey, Chappelle's going to be here. Hey, Chappelle's coming. Hey, keep going. Chappelle's going to be here. Like, everyone was losing their shit. And then that wore off real fast. That's good. That's so fun.
Oh, and all the comics started pouring in, like, cause like, you know, one person texts one person and then they text somebody else. So it was like a ton of comics in the green room. And it was like, okay, I bet you guys are loving this. Sure.
Yeah. Now what, so who right now do you have a comedy crush on? Like who are you watching right now that you're just like, fuck, man, I would watch that person for 2 hours, just talk about nothing. If there is anybody that would do that to you.
I don't think I want to watch anybody talk for 2 hours. I mean, Tim Dillon's probably my favorite like podcaster right now. So I would listen to him multiple hours on his podcast, but like, I don't really want to be in a room where I can't leave. So I'd say Tim Dillon's great. There's a lot of like British comics that I've been enjoying. Like, I don't know if they're like necessarily stand-ups, but like just like comedy wise, like Daisy May Cooper's very funny. Greg Davies is really good. Rasheen Kennedy, like, I probably sound more like Cody because I know he's very much into British comedy.
Very much so, yeah.
But yeah, I think, I mean, that was just like probably one of the most fun things that over quarantine is I just started watching some more British comedy, and it was like very refreshing to like see new faces and stuff. But I guess like Tom Segura is really good. Like, I would like to see him live probably. I've been watching a lot of YMH.
Sure. Yeah. No, I heard, you know, I think it was Seth Rogen on Conan's podcast where he was saying that in England and in Canada, you know, comedy is such an import, or excuse me, an export, where like their countries are really proud of their comedy and they're like treated differently. And so it's a whole different atmosphere where they're not like fighting the crowds as much as we are, or they're, you know, a lot more kind of respected. And I don't know, I'd never really heard of that before, and that was kind of refreshing to hear. But
yeah, maybe they treat it more like a performance as opposed to like a thing that's going on while you're eating chicken tenders.
Yeah, yeah. Or why can't I play pinball while you're doing your set? Yeah.
Oh, I've almost gotten in a fight with somebody because they wanted to play ping pong during one of Ian's shows in Atlanta. And when they dropped the ping pong ball, I picked it up and I wouldn't give it back to them.
Uh-huh.
And then they called me a cunt and I went, yep. And they left mad, but I won.
You did win. And you got to.
But you can't play ping pong during a comedy show.
No, you really
That's
can't.
Insane.
You can't. We have a place here in Charleston that I'm not a huge fan of the place. Sorry, Sarah Napier, if you're listening. It's one of her venues, but they have they don't turn off their arcade machines, and they have like a big buck hunter, and it's so loud, and people will fucking play it. And so like now, like someone stands over there and like to try to make sure no one plays it, but it's just like, come on, man, like this is not conducive.
I'd have more fun doing that than I probably did hosting for Chappelle, because at least I'd have a purpose. Yeah. Like, I'm there to do something. I'm there to make the show better, as opposed to just like waiting to go good night, because that was literally all I had to do. But yeah, I would be good at that. But here's the thing, who in this economy is going like, let me spend my money on hunting fake deer with a fake plastic gun?
They love it, man. They eat that shit up. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Now you play video games, right?
Yes, at home, in the comfort of my own home. I don't need to show anybody.
Well, you
like have, out I mean,
you
in the
have
world.
Your Twitch though, which is cool. No. I mean, in a good
yeah,
way.
Yeah,
yeah. Because I was watching some of your Jurassic Park play, and it was really fucking funny. It was hilarious. I enjoyed that
Thank
thoroughly.
You.
Yeah.
I thought really I would good. Like that game better. I really liked Indiana Jones Lego, and this one was like a baby game. So yeah, I mean. Yeah, I guess I could say I spent money on that. I just don't see spending money at a place where it's like there are people around. Yeah. It's like, it seems dickish, honestly, to like play a video game during a comedy show.
I think it's up there with ping pong. And of course, pool. Savannah has that problem. Most of their comedy venues, or not comedy venues, but little comedy bars have pool tables. And that's pool tables and comedy. You might as well have us pitted against a magician. Like, I hate pool tables almost as I hate, you know, as much as I hate magicians.
But I mean, I guess that's up to the venue owner to like, or I guess the comedians to inform that there's a show going on. And then the venue owner goes, there's no pool at this time. Like, otherwise, why are you having a show if you're not going to like put the pool sticks up? You know,
100% agree. You have to. I think we've talked about it on this podcast that, you know, kind of the do's and don'ts of running a show. And that's like one of the signs, if they refuse to turn off their TVs or their, especially their big buck hunter, might not be a great venue to continue trying to do comedy at.
Yeah. And sometimes like you go into a thing and you don't go, oh, why wouldn't they turn off the big buck hunter? Of course they will. It's a show. And then because you didn't bring it up in the first place, then it's like weird to ever bring it up after that.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, yeah, like that's one of the things like about comedy shows is like when you go in to like running one, like knowing what you want out of it, which is like, if you just want to like host the worst show, then don't have any, you know, like, I guess riders in your contract with the venue. But like, yeah, like if you want to know, like, are they going to have the sound system? Are they going to make people shut up? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Or are they going to be like the antagonist to your show?
Which sometimes they are, they can be. And then, you know, something that you touch on when, you know, I thought about when you were talking about like the 2 hour Chappelle, you know, even when it's like, you know, their best material, you know, and the headliner, I don't know if it's my attention span or if it's a generational thing, but I can no longer stand listening to someone for an hour do comedy. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just because I've watched too many YouTube videos now and I've just seen small clicks, but I can't do it unless there's a certain amount of people I can. But what about you? What are your thoughts on that? Like the hour long or, you know, 50 minute set. How do you feel about those?
I mean, I guess if you can sell tickets and somebody's going to come see you for an hour, then they must really like you. But if it's like, I guess it's just like, are you good enough to hold their attention for an hour? Or are you up there for, you know, just for your ego? Yeah. But yeah, I guess if people are like going out and buying a ticket to a headliner show, then they should expect to sit and be polite members of society for a full hour. Yeah. But I think like you're saying, like our attention spans are much shorter, which I think is why like the showcase format at like Skull works, because it's like 10 people doing 8 minutes or 8 people doing 10 minutes. And it's like, if you don't like this, somebody's coming up in a couple minutes. Calm down, go get a drink, go to the bathroom. Like, you won't have to watch this for too long. But that's, you know, that's again, like personal accountability to what you want to do with your night out, where you're like, who would go see a headliner for an hour if they weren't prepared to
do it,
behave yeah. themselves and enjoy it? Yeah, yeah. Like, are you just trying to punish yourself? Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing though, because even, you know, myself, which if I'm going to a show, and there's comedians I love, but like after 20, 30 minutes, I'm checked out no matter who they are. I just can't, like, I'm fine. I'm going to sit there and be quiet. I, you know, I bought a ticket. I don't know what it is. I think I like you, like, I really just enjoy this showcase format of, I want to hear different voices. And if I don't like yours, like, I can wait 10 minutes or I can go play a game of Big Buck Hunter. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. You're like, I brought my own pocket Big Buck Hunter. It's yeah. just as loud. Don't worry.
It's just as loud. Now, let me look at some other questions that I had for you. Here's a good one. So the Israelis or the Palestinians, who do you support and why? No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. Don't answer that. I'm trying to cancel you is what I'm doing.
Is this a pro-Israeli podcast? Are you guys?
Yeah, both.
Is that why you don't want me to answer it?
On Wednesday, on Wednesdays, we're pro-Palestine. And then Fridays, okay. We do our Israeli show. So it's a little of both. But today's Tuesday, yeah. So that's, you know.
Walking that tightrope.
Yeah, anything goes on Tuesday. Now, here's something I always like asking people. What is your... two-part question. One, for the comedian that, you know, we have a lot of comedians that just started off and they listen to the show. The people that can't stand hot breath for too long. I'm kidding. Sorry, Joel Byers.
That's the real controversial topic. Let's go back to the Middle East, please.
But what is your best advice if you were to be that mentor for a second? What is your best advice you give to that person that's been doing it for about a, you know, maybe a year? You know, they're trying to work their tight five. They're trying to, you know, get some video. What's your best advice? What do you like telling younger comics?
I mean, I guess it would be more centered around what their issue is. Like,
true. Yeah.
You know, if they're trying to get a tight five, like, are you doing your joke the exact same way every time? Are you trying to like, are you editing it like between, like, are you going, this is good enough? Because I mean, like, personally, like, I'm a little like obsessive when it comes to like word efficiency. So like trying to get to the punchline in as quickly a time as possible while setting it up properly. But also just like, I would say like, if you can find a way to have fun when you're on stage, you will find like the voice your voice more quickly. Cause I remember being like very obsessed with like people being like, I gotta find your voice in comedy. You gotta find your voice in comedy. And it's like, if you are consistently doing good and consistently having fun, like where that overlaps is kind of your voice. Mm-hmm. So it's not like just having fun and no one's liking it. And it's not just doing good and you hate it. Like if you can find whatever's in the middle of that and what you like genuinely like talking about, like how you think jokes are the funniest, like are you one-liners, like just like being honest. And I think being honest is a huge thing too, because a lot of times people will like to put on a facade of like, I'm the cool guy, I'm the virgin who fucks or whatever, like they think is like their act.
Yeah.
And then you're like, just that, like, just be honest with yourself. And I know that's very hard, like a year in. So like more generic advice would be like, when you go to a show, watch the whole show. Like if you're going to a mic and you're like halfway through the list, you're at the end of the list. If you watch the show and you see what people are liking, then you can inform your set that way. If you see every single person has pulled the microphone from the stand and the cord's fallen out, maybe you don't do that. Maybe you leave it in there. Like being like aware and present when you're like at shows. But yeah, just like trying to figure out a way to have fun. And like, you don't have to like write all, like you don't have to have new stuff all the time, but like, if the shit you're doing is only working okay, figure out a way to make it work really good.
Yeah. I like it. Figure a way to do it really good. The book from Katie Hughes. I like
That's
it.
That's right. Well, because, you know, people go, okay, like that joke's done. And like people are watching it and you're going, well, that's not done.
Yeah.
Like people aren't laughing every time you do it. Or people who are surprised when they get a laugh, but they keep telling the joke, even though it usually doesn't get a laugh, but it got that laugh one time and they don't know why. So they keep doing it. Like ask somebody, honestly, like if, mm-hmm. like if you're out at a show, and I'm not making myself available to everyone, but like, if, you know, if you see somebody who you're like, oh, I like their comedy.
Yeah.
Just come up and be like, hey, did you watch my set? Well, don't go, how was my set? Give the person a chance to lie, honestly.
Yeah,
go, course. Did you watch my set? And if I did watch it and it was bad, I'll go, no. But if you want, you know, no, like be like, you know, I'd love notes. Or like if you see somebody who's at the show, you can go, hey, would you mind watching my set and seeing like maybe where I could add a punchline? Or like, I never get a laugh where I think I should. Could you watch it and tell me why? Like not just going like, because when you said, oh, just be better, that made me realize like, you have to have specific goals for maybe each yeah. set where you're like, yeah. okay, I want to work on this joke. And so if you ask somebody, how was my set? And they go, good. Well, that's not going to do anything. But if you go, hey, I'm working on this chunk about my family, and I think it makes people uncomfortable because I talk about being molested. Can you tell me what part of it is weird or what part of it is good? And then yeah. like be like, okay, well, the part where you say rape, people don't like that. But maybe if you figure out a better word, then maybe you could have a euphemism that makes people more comfortable. You know what I mean? Yeah, and that's course. A very specific example
yeah.
that no one's doing in Atlanta. There's not nearly enough incest.
It's not enough
material.
Rape. It's not enough rape yeah. going on in Atlanta right now.
Let's go back to the original yeah. question. What's wrong with the Atlanta comedy scene? Not nearly enough rape jokes.
Not enough. We need more. We not need enough. More Atlanta. Do you hear us? Do you hear Please. Us, Joel Byers?
That's why we want people to do ours when you're ready to have all of the family fucking material in a row.
Yeah. Incest rape is probably, I don't know. That's really
if
big.
If it's incest, isn't it automatic? Is it not automatically rape?
I think it is. I think it's just rape. Just you go right to the rape. Like if it was the, you know, the carnival game where you smash the thing, it goes, it's Ding. Right to rape.
Yeah.
Right to rape.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree. You know, one of the things that has been annoying to me lately is I have a lot of comedians that come to me for advice, which is great. I feel honored, but they'll send me their tape and then I will give them honest feedback and then they defend it. And
I'm like, well, you can't do anything with those idiots.
Yeah. I'm like, they're morons. Why the fuck did you send it to me then? And I think either they're secretly sending it to me so I can,
you'll book them.
Yeah. I'll book them or suck them off and be like, that's the greatest video I've ever seen. I don't know what it is, but like they just get so defensive and it's like, well, I'm not being an asshole. Like I'm taking the time out of my day to to give you advice, and you don't have to take it, but you don't have to I don't know. It's weird. A lot of people do that, and I don't get it. I don't like it.
Well, that goes back to being honest with yourself. So like, if there's a reason you're sending it to someone and you go, give me some notes, and then they send you notes back, and then you go, no, that's not right. Well, then like, clearly you're not being honest in that you're like seeing it only from your perspective, yeah, as opposed to like seeing it as an audience member, as a booker. But I will say, just at my first inclination, and this is only like as someone who is a woman who has figured out a way to diplomatically say things a lot, like I feel like maybe, because people have asked me for advice, and I always start off sentences with like, maybe try this.
Of course.
Maybe do, like, I yeah. never say anything like definitively.
Sure, sure. Of course. No, it's you.
And then I never hear back from them, and it's great.
That's the way to do it. Now, you know, one of the things too here in Charleston, which you said you haven't been to Charleston in a very long time, right?
Not in years. Yeah.
Have you performed here before?
I don't know. I've
let's say you haven't, because that's really good for
publicity. I don't think I have. I mean, like, I want to say like maybe I did one show there one time, no, but like,
doesn't count.
It probably was 10 years ago if I did. Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't count. This is the Charleston premiere of Katie Hughes.
This is new Charleston.
Yeah. But one of the problems we have, I wouldn't say it is a problem. I mean, we don't have enough representation of like women, people of color. We're dealing with that.
It's Charleston.
Exactly. It's Charleston. Weird. Weird. You have a problem there? You guys started the Civil War.
We actually only have Civil War ghosts doing open mics at this point.
So I have a punch up for somebody. They haven't used it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the premise is, and this joke has to be for a black comedian, of course, but I want the joke to be like, I don't believe in ghosts because I've never heard ghost like whisper the N-word in Charleston, because there's like ghost tours and stuff, because you would think like if it's old Civil War general or something that's a ghost, they would be very racist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I even mentioned that, but I want that
to well happen. So this is a joke, this is your premise that you would like to give to someone?
Yes, I've given it to him, and
I would say don't give that to anyone. Why don't you do it?
That's true. Yeah, I'll just have to re-manipulate it a little bit.
Because you don't have to say the N-word in it. I mean, you could literally say the N-word.
True.
Like, if you're like, I don't know why there's no civil, or I don't believe in ghosts or whatever, because I've never heard them do X, Y, and whatever. Z, and then just be more, you know, like illustrative it. With what they're saying.
You hear that, John Antoine? I'm taking that joke back because you haven't used it yet. Probably because it wasn't funny as it needs to be, but you're going to see, buddy.
But yeah, if it's like something that you feel strongly about, you do the joke. Like giving someone a joke, because there's jokes my friends have that I'm like, if you ever stop telling that joke, give it to me.
Yeah.
But like, I do think it's hard to like tell someone to do a joke, because like comedy is so like personal, where it's a point of pride, where like you have people doing jokes and you go, here's a tag to your even a friend, and then they won't do it because it's not something they wrote.
Even
I'm not
good.
Like that. Yeah. Like if somebody gives me a decent tag,
yeah,
that is a joke I've already written, I'll do it. I'll take those laughs.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I was saying about Charleston, you know, with us being Charleston, you know, one of the things that guys don't understand with you know, women comedians is how hard it is to start comedy. And that's, I think, one of the reasons, and you tell me, I'm not, you know, by any means a woman, and I know you're not a monolith for all women, but like, I think it's a lot harder for a woman to go to a bar and say, I'm going to start doing stand-up and go to an open mic versus a guy, and like continually do that. I think that's where
it starts.
Oh, I think
that like the safety issue is certainly a concern. Like, yeah, it is harder for like women to tour and like feel safe on the road and like, you know, not necessarily like, oh, you get to stay at the condo with this man you've never met. Like, you're like, well, I don't have money to stay at a hotel. So I have like either the option of trusting them or like putting up my own money. Like, so I think that the safety issue is a thing, but I don't think like the creativity issue is a thing. So no, it's like, if you think that you really want to do comedy, why don't you start a mic at a coffee shop?
Yeah.
Or, you know, talk to another female comic, like not even if there's not one in the area. Like, be like, oh, I really like this chick out of Charlotte, and I know she runs a show. I've done that one. Maybe I can ask her how she started, you know, whatever. But like, I would say as far as like getting advice, like women are very like, in my experience, like any local comic who like is a little seasoned will totally be like, hey, here's the honest truth about it. Like, here's what you should ask the venue. Here's this and that. I mean, there is safety in numbers, so that there's like a concern about that. Like, go with another female comedian, or you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Bring a friend. Like, you can always bring a friend to a show, mm-hmm. Which might be odd if you're like just starting out and you're like embarrassed. You can go, hey, just don't watch me when I'm up. We'll hang out the rest of the night. Like, yeah. I would say like that kind of thing. Like, because ultimately we're all responsible for our own safety, even though there are predators out there. So you do have to take those steps to go, what will make me feel safe? But then once you get on stage, like being unapologetically funny and saying the things that you want to say and understanding like joke format, like if you're the best at what you do, like people will book you on shows and then make sure no one fucks with you when you're at their yeah. show. So like, just like, it's just like any other job, except like, I mean, if you've had a restaurant job where you have to close at night, you know, if there's somebody else there, will you walk me to my car so I don't get murdered?
Sure. General,
like, so
general
stuff like that, where you, yeah.
General human things. I mean, even as a booker, you know, I try to take that extra step, but not too much of an extra step, if that makes sense. Like, I want to make sure any female that I book that they're comfortable, or that if they want to bring their own feature, if they want to, you know, whatever, that they're comfortable. Cause I feel like it's different, and that's, it is what it is. But at the same time, it just sucks, is I guess where I'm getting at on that.
Yeah. I do think like, you know, you could go one way and you could just be like, you know, I'm not going to let anything stop me, blah, blah, blah. But like, at the same time, you do have to like take the precautions of being like, am I parking in a well-lit area? And not that men can't get mugged or murdered or raped or all of those lovely things that we fear, yeah. but like just like being like aware and going, hey, if I'm gonna go to a new place, maybe you know, I bring a friend or whatever. But like, I would say like, if those are your concerns, where you're like, I want to be somewhere like I have a like a personal like responsibility to the safety of myself, then start your own show. Like, do a daytime show on a Sunday at a coffee shop. Like, if that's like your, like if it's out of your comfort zone, like that is a big part of comedy, where it's like, no one, it's so unnatural to tell jokes on stage. Truly one of the most unnatural things we could choose to do. But like your personal safety as opposed to your emotional security is like paramount.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I've kept you so long. There's one more question that I want to ask.
Yeah.
I always enjoy asking this to people. It's confession time. And what this is any like pop culture thing that everyone else was on and you never were, but you maybe have lied, or maybe you like, you just didn't say anything. Like, I have a confession today that like, and I've never said, like one, a good example is I've never seen any of the Lethal Weapon movies. And it just hasn't happened, you know, and I don't care. And mine today, though, is Dave Matthews and Tori Amos. I have no idea what they're saying, and I don't like their music. Just period. I just don't like it. I don't know what they're talking about. They're mumbling, and I can't figure out what they're saying. And I just want the world to know that. And it feels good that I just told the, you know, all two people who listen to this podcast that. It feels good. So rack your brain for a second. I'm stalling right now because I want you to think of something that you've never really said. You've said to, you know, a few friends or here and there, but something you haven't told the masses when it comes to something like that.
I would say, I'll give you two, and okay. One of them's going to be so controversial, and I'll let you pick which one it is.
Okay.
But I feel like it won't be controversial for your listeners. But I don't really care about music. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I think I liked it more when I was like in high school and college, and I was like full of angst and emotions, and like really like felt it.
Yeah.
But I feel like the more, dead inside I become, the more I just want to like, either listen to something that is like thought provoking or makes me laugh or even makes me mad. Like, I'd rather listen to Rush Limbaugh than music, honestly. Let's put that out there.
Okay. Before we get to the next one, I want you to save that. We are kindled spirits, because I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to have the same confession. I don't care about music whatsoever. Like, if God came down and said, hey, music, it's fucking gone. Sorry, guys. And he left. I would be completely fine. I don't give a shit about, I barely listen to music.
My life wouldn't change that much either. Yeah.
I listen to NPR in my car. Like, I don't listen to music. Like, and my kids want to listen to music, and I'm like, why? Like, what? And then there's like maybe 10 songs from when I was, you know, in high school in the 90s that I'm okay with listening to. But other than that, and then I do have this weird thing. You brought up Rush Limbaugh. I have this weird, I don't know if it's some deep repressive weird thing, but I really enjoy listening to shitty conservative radio.
Same.
And I get angry and I get so mad. And I'm like, you know, my wife's like, why are you listening to this? And I'm like, I don't know, but I have to, and I love it.
I love it. It's like having someone to argue. Well, I think it's like you see inside other people's like point of view.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, this is why they're arguing that. This is like, it's not just like this broad, like, you know, headline where it's like, this is happening. It's like, this is what they also think is happening. And this is how they argue it's happening.
Yeah.
But like the worse the argument, the more straw man the argument, like you have Rush Limbaugh, who sometimes makes a salient point, not always, or I mean, he's dead now. So not always then. But like sometimes he would say one thing out of 100 things where you go, well, that's reasonable.
Yeah, like, okay. And then he goes crazy right after that.
Well, the fact that he's like such a horrible person negates all of that. But you're like, if you saw that sentence on a piece of paper and you didn't know who said it, I get it.
Yeah.
But then like you get like to the like Mark Steins or like the really, really right wing people who are on like just absolutely insane, like on AM radio. That is a delight.
Alex
because
Jones.
It's like mental illness.
Lizard people. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. Oh, Alex Jones. That's why people do agree with him, I'm sure, but like most normal, especially comedians, when you watch someone like that, you go, oh, this is someone having a mental breakdown. Of course I'm gonna enjoy this. And they're making so many bad points. Like, I would say he'd be harder to argue with because it's hard to argue with something that's like non-existent, whereas like Rush Limbaugh is like using reason and twisting things where you're like, oh, okay. But I do love NPR. Like, I could, like, I was the person who would, like, you know, be listening to, like, you know, a story, and I would park my car and I would finish listening to the story. Like, like that is like the power of their shows. Like, I like podcasts better than I like music.
Mm-hmm. Music,
and not to say,
I don't get it.
I heard my favorite song, I wouldn't listen to it. Like, oh, this is my favorite song in high school, but like, I don't have a new favorite band. When they ask me for an intro song at shows, I go, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
Not Shania Twain. How about that?
What I do, anytime they ask if I want a song to come into, I always do Pop That Pussy, because then I say it was my wedding song and that's my opening joke.
That's funny.
Yeah. And that's it. That's all I have.
I started using, because like Cardi B's Bodak Yellow was always one that I would pick like before quarantine, like doing clubs, because I'd just go, they let me pick my own song. And like, this weekend I was at Good Nights and they go, what do you want? And I go, just something upbeat. And then they played like country music. And I was like, oh, I didn't mean that. Just Cardi B. Like, I just went back to the old standard. Cause I'm like, you know, even if it's not the same joke anymore, cause it's like, you know, sometimes you don't have that same energy with the like, oh, this sounds like a riff, but it's not, like, you know, they'll play it too long. And I go, oh no, play the whole thing. Or, you know, just going, yep, that's me. Like, you know, just dumb shit like that where you're,
Now, what is your other confession?
If it doesn't match you, then that's fun.
What's your other confession? You had another one.
Oh, I did watch BTS the other day, because I was like, I see them on, they're always the trending topic on Twitter.
Yep.
It's like, I don't know their names.
The kids
like
from Korea,
I know one's
right?
Jungkook. Yeah.
Yep.
And I went, well, let me look at this. It was some of the most, and this is, I don't think your listeners are going to care. It was trash. Like, there's music and then there's whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
And I hated it.
I don't think I'm going to lose any listeners over this. I don't think they're going
to
be like,
I don't think you have a lot of preteen gals listening to comedy advice, but if you do, be safe, but also stop BTS, you know?
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, it's funny. I don't have a lot of like, you know, young girls that listen to this podcast, but I have a ton of like, everyone in my son's high school listens to the show. And I tell, cause you know, it's a lot of dick and fart jokes on the show and they all listen to it and get giddy. So I have to be careful now what I talk about. Like, I don't talk about my, you know, son, you know, shousterbating anymore, even though I just did. But I have to watch out. So it's kind of funny cause I'll get excited when I see, you know, some numbers on certain days and then it's all from this little town called Knightsville, which is next to his school. I'm like, oh, it's just 16-year-old
I think
kids.
That's cool. That's how you build the fan base early, and then later they come out and see you when they can come to a club.
That's right, like Howard Stern. That's right. So
yeah, get them hooked young.
That's right. So on the 12th of June, again, Katie, I'm super excited for you to come out. Your album,
me too.
Queen of the Castle is an amazing album.
Thank you.
I love it. Was that your first album?
It was my first album. It's like all the material that I mean, some of the jokes are like pretty old, like where it's like, oh, the teacher joke was like something I was doing like in Chicago and sure. like figured out how to tell it like perfectly, you know, perfectly, whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of it has been like the 4 years that I'd lived in Atlanta up until then. So it's like, I mean, I don't have any material left now that's not on there.
Hell yeah, fuck it. Who
that's
cares?
as polished, you know what I mean? Where sure. it's like, oh, you just did all your best stuff and it's out there. But yeah, come to the show. Don't listen to the album
don't
first.
Don't listen. Okay, so when I talked about Queen of the Castle, that you can get it on, you know, anywhere that you get
you
your
can.
Music. You can, but you're not going to because you're going to spend the $12 to come listen to Katie. Or, you know, there's some VIP passes we'll get you up front so we can smell Katie's breath. We can see what,
right.
yeah, we can see what it's like.
Jewel pods and Diet Coke, baby.
Yes. Yes. And then, yeah. So come to the show June 12th with Jason Gross, Tim Heckle. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be a really good show. And I'm really excited about you coming out.
And you're going to be on it, right? You're hosting.
I'm going to host, you know, I'm still at that weird stage where like, I feel anytime I host, I didn't mind doing it early, but now I feel like a DJ at a strip club. Because it's not my type of comedy. So going mm-hmm. up there and I'm like, hey, you know, the next comic we have up is blah, 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 blah. I hate that. I hate it. And I know there's like a way to be yourself and be a host, but then sometimes it doesn't match right. Or, you know, a lot of my materials, you know, some of it's a little hard punching and they don't want to hear about, you know, my first experience with, you know, Boy Scouts sucking each other's dicks when I was 17. Like, they don't want to hear that on the top of a show. You know what I mean? And I'm like, all right, now you're opener, you know, they don't want that.
Yeah, I would say if I'm hosting a show, I'll do my most crowd pleasing stuff, high energy stuff up top yeah. and not really do like, or the short, like, you know, the shortest jokes where you're like, okay, here we go. We're doing this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do agree with that where it's like, it could be jarring to be like a storyteller comedian where you're like, oh, this usually works in a longer set, but it's hard to do as a host.
Yeah. That, and as a host, they're not there to see you. And as a comedian who, you know, as we all have, you know, some weird mental problems, like I have a, you know, I'm like, man, they don't care about me. They just want me to get the show going, which is fine. Cause I move that shit along. I'm not there to, you know, take the lead. You know what I mean? I can't
yeah.
stand when people do that, but I can talk to you forever, Katie. Thank you again. And I so look forward to you coming out. Is there anything you
want
to, what can I plug? Where can I find you on the internets?
Okay. So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I did delete them from my phone, but I will still respond to you on my laptop. It's at Katie Bruise, KATIEBRUISE. And then I'm on Twitch at Uncle Katie. And yeah, you can go download my album. You can listen to it for free on Spotify, or you can pay money for it on iTunes.
Pay money for it. Pay money for it. You get like
I don't think I get anything for it.
Do you get like a dollar? Have you got anything from it?
I don't know.
We're going to find out. The best way to find out.
We're going to find out.
We're going to find out because the best way to do it is have them pay for it. You get the money. We'll get you back on the podcast. You're like, yeah, I got $3 this last year for
go to SiriusXM and tell them you want to hear them play me more often, even if you don't have SiriusXM, and that's where I'll get the most
money.
Have
you been on Sirius?
Yeah, they play me on Jeff Foxworthy and Larry the Cable Guy's show a lot because
really?
I do a lot of Southern comedy.
Yeah,
and so I was as surprised as anyone. But like some weeks there'll be like 30, 40 plays on the Redneck channel. And I'm like so stoked that
that has to be exciting. Yeah, because I mean that's the reason to get your albums out there, man.
That's
is to get
the
on
real
Sirius.
Money. Yeah.
Well, Sirius. Katie, it's been a pleasure. And go listen to her podcast. Yes, but don't,
your carriage awaits.
Yeah, your carriage awaits. You can find it on everywhere you can find podcasts, and of course it's on the Helium Podcast Network. But don't go listen to it and fall in love with it and then stop listening to this show. Because then I don't know. I have nothing, but don't do that. Don't do that.
You won't. Don't worry. There's only like 19 episodes. You'll be back.
Yeah. That and yeah, there's way more dick and fart jokes on here, 16-year-old. You hear that? Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Bye. Awesome.